Welcome to the Gardening in the Mountains Home Gardening Show with Steve Pettis. Steve is your Henderson County agent with NC State University, here to talk gardening, answer your questions, and help you make your garden grow better. Call the extension office at 697-4891 or email Steve at gardeninginthemountains@gmail.com to have your gardening questions answered. That's 697-4891 or email Steve at gardeninginthemountains@gmail.com.
Brought to you by A Growing Concern,
celebrating 40 years.
Bring life and color to your outdoor and indoor space with the professionals at A Growing Concern, Spartanburg Highway.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Gardening in the Mountains radio show and podcast. I'm Steve Pettis, your local county extension agent and host. We're here to talk gardening, answer your garden questions, and help you make your garden grow better. And today, joining me in the studio is the one, the only, the master of plants, the gardener extraordinaire, the guru of horticulture, Duke Domingue. Duke.
I'm a master and a guru today.
Yes,
Steve.
You are.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're the Bodhisattva of the horticulture industry in Henderson County.
Well, I doubt that. Oh, Steve, what do you want to talk about today?
Man, I think we need to talk about fertilizers.
I do.
Yeah.
Feed your plants.
Yes, this was a great idea you had, so we had to do an emergency podcast.
That's exactly
right.
Get
in here and record this because...
All about all the ferts, the macros, the micros, and mycos. We'll talk about some soil building, too.
Yeah, and I thought I'd start off with a little history.
I love that. You always have some great anecdotes.
A little agricultural history.
So, lay one on me, sir.
So, agriculture basically was, supposedly, according to archaeologists and historians, started 10,000 years ago or so, by people who... Basically, we're hunter-gatherers. They might spill something, and they saw a deer.
Sure.
They're like, well, why can't I just go out and gather these things and plant them myself? They also selected for larger plants by only picking the large fruit and leaving the small fruit behind.
Clever.
Because then if you take the seeds from those and plant them, then the genetics in the offspring should be a little larger. You do that for thousands of years, and you take a rose hip and turn it into an apple, right?
Right.
And so that's kind of the way crops evolved over millennia. You know, that's the way, the teosinte, which is the predecessor of corn, which is a little little grain on the top of a grass, within a few thousand years became, ears of corn, was just through selection. And whether the people knew they were doing it or not, I feel like they probably did know. I have this thought a lot because I love archaeology and I love the ancients. And I think about, there had to be gardeners, like there were probably women in the village, in a Native American village, who were just like, horticultural gurus. And they probably had like beautiful gardens. Like, I mean, why do we think that landscapes are relegated only to our civilization? I bet people landscaped in the past, planted for beauty.
Of course.
Collected beautiful flowers, from the woods and planted in their...
Making medicines.
In their village to make medicines, but also to look nice. And but one of the things that people realized was that anywhere that organic matter accumulated, plants grew better.
Mm-hmm.
So, the waste dump outside of a village... seeds invariably end up in there because they usually are in the waste. And then you get these blackberries growing in the compost pile or the refuse heap that are very robust, and they eventually made the connection that you use the organic matter.
Wow.
And so, the traditional story about Native Americans using fish.
Sure,
planting
a fish.
Native Americans would actually plant in these mounds where they planted corn, the three sisters, the corn, the beans, and the squashes. In a big mound, but that mound consisted of a bunch of organic matter, and fish was part of it. But they'd also bury sticks and all that other stuff. So, that they knew that adding that to the soil improved the soil, made the plants grow better.
That's key. That's certainly key.
Yeah, and it's just observation. I mean, imagine thousands of years of observation you come up with.
And we're still using fish emulsion.
Totally.
And it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great.
And bone meal, which they knew about bone meal too. And indigenous peoples in the... in the tropics, actually, because the tropical soils are terrible because they get leached out by the rain, and they realized that they could burn when they clear cut a patch of jungle, they could burn that material that they clear cut, they could bury it in the soil, and create a very productive soil. And those soils, many thousands of years later, finding now in the Amazon, are still fertile beyond what the normal soils are around them. That's how long. Biochar.
Biochar.
Can improve the soil. And then you and I had this conversation, just kind of where this came from, talking about the guano industry of the 1800s, which is fascinating.
Seabird guano, bad guano.
Yeah, there was almost wars fought over these islands of ancient guano piles where they would, birds had been roosting for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years probably, and their droppings had turned into basically minerals.
Absolutely. I really favor one of those fertilizers right now called Island Phosphate. That's all seabird guano.
Yeah, that's how we got on this topic.
Right, and seabird's nothing but a diet of fish.
So that was the first, like, commercial fertilizer was that. And then in the 1900s, a German scientist figured out how to extract nitrogen from the air through a chemical process. And so that led to synthetic fertilizers. Mm-hmm. Basically, they capture nitrogen from the air, put it into a fertilizer, then you can put it into the soil. And then by the 50s, you add the fertilizer technology to new advances in plant breeding. And now you've got what we call the Green Revolution. And this is when yields went from 50 bushels an acre of corn to 200 bushels an acre.
And they were doing that synthetically.
Yes.
Versus organically.
Yeah, making the fertilizers synthetically in a factory, basically.
Right.
And usually the cool thing is you can actually add this as a byproduct to things like producing gas and oil.
Mm-hmm.
You take the energy, like the natural gas that's left over, like burn a lot of that off. We can use that to fuel a fertilizer factory. And so even today, like the Strait of Hormuz, there's fertilizers blocked up because they can't get them out of these oil-producing regions, because that's where a lot of the fertilizer comes from. And then finally, the last thing I'll mention is a historical thing, which is a great story I heard on a podcast, which blew my mind, and I had to go and confirm it to make sure it was true.
I love this.
So the Napoleonic Wars put millions of people in the ground, soldiers in the ground, and horses, too. Like, I mean, an untold number of horses were killed during the Napoleonic Wars and all those wars of the middle 1700s, 1800s.
Sure.
And in the 1800s, the peasants started digging up those mass graves and mining the bones of the horses and the people, and they take them and grind them up into bone meal, and they would sell them to England.
Wow.
And the British were buying it. They didn't really know
where
it was coming from.
Yeah. Oh,
and so
for
several generations, the British agricultural economy basically was based on bones of dead soldiers.
Well, plenty of nutrients there. You have bone meal, you have blood meal, and they'd been composting for
a
while.
So we talked about a couple of fertilizers that you're very fond of, guano-based fertilizers, bone meal-based fertilizers. So talk to me about...
Well, let's just start at the very beginning, at the basics. NP and K, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So when you see the numbers on the side of a bottle or box of fertilizer, that's what these numbers mean. The first one is N. The second one is phosphorus, or N or nitrogen. The second one's phosphorus, and the third one's potassium. This is a ratio. So if you see a 10-10-10, that means there are equal amounts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. 20-20-20 also means there's an equal amount of these three macronutrients. Yep. It just means that it's double concentrated.
Yep.
Let's talk about each one and what they do. So nitrogen is the leaf builder. It deals with chlorophyll production. It's a key component to make your leaves green and driving photosynthesis. It's vegetative growth is what I always say about nitrogen. If you have a deficiency in nitrogen, you might see yellowing or slow growth or really long spaces between the nodes. Sometimes that can also be chlorosis or iron deficiency. The second number is phosphorus, and that is both roots, early production roots, but also bloom boosters. So those bloom boosting formulas in your flower production, and flowers not just for how pretty they are, but for food. You know, tomato is at one point a flower. And energy transfer, helping the plant convert the sunlight into a usable form of chemical energy. The third one is potassium, and that's kind of a stress protector and an overall health builder. It deals with cell strength in the cell walls, water retention and regulation, so they don't blast, as we sometimes say, and it largely produces stress resistance. I find that K also has a very big association to root growth and root stimulus, as well as phosphorus does as well. But phosphorus, to me, deals more with root and bloom. So you have these different elements. Now, mind you, they come from different sources. They're actually four different sources of nitrogen. There's nitrate nitrogen, which is immediate and kind of ready to use. It's something that plants can absorb right away. It usually dissolves completely in water and can move very freely in the soil, but it can also wash away and leach. The second form of nitrogen is ammonia, or ammoniacal nitrogen, they call it sometimes, and it provides, once again, a fast acting nutrition that clings to soil particles and won't wash away as easily, but it takes some time for the plant to access this, and there's some plants that can't access this, orchids being one of them. Then there's urea-based nitrogen, or amide, I think they call it, and it provides a really high concentration of, and it's very inexpensive, budget-friendly nitrogen that turns into ammonia and ammonium via soil enzymes. So this is why sometimes, you know, your dog urinating in the yard is not necessarily a bad thing, because there is urea. Now, mind you, it can, if it's always in the same place, that's not a great idea. It's fast acting once it is transformed. So that's amide or nitrogen-based, urea-based nitrogen. Then there are also slow-released or controlled-release nitrogen. So these are going to be better for things that are really in the ground. Annuals, I say just push them all the way. Now, so far as potassium, or rather phosphorus, next, there are two different kinds. There's MAP and DAP. There's monoammonium and diammonium. But the one that I really want to address is triple superphosphate, or TSP, as we call it. I really don't like this fertilizer. It used to be very popular. It's waning in popularity. There are a lot of reasons why I wish that if you're listening to this podcast, you take back nothing else but stop using TSP. There's a high risk of water pollution. There is a lot of soil fixation, and it's very, very, very inefficient. It builds up over time. It induces micronutrient deficiencies, and it over time, since it never really goes away, it can cling to particles, and you can build up trace amounts over time of heavy metals like cadmium and arsenic, and I even think lead. And over time, they can wash away and kind of contaminate soil crops. It's also really bad economics, and the manufacturing process is pretty bad. So please don't use TSP. There are all kinds of great organic slow-release sources. We talked about a couple of them. Bone meal is great for phosphorus instead. And raw rock phosphates, I'm big into these right now, like island phosphates. Seaweed and kelp are great sources of some of these things too. So that's the macros that we're talking about. We'll move on to micros next, I suppose.
Yeah. When we get back from this break, we'll talk more about fertilizers here with Duke Domingue from A Growing Concern Garden Center here on the Gardening in the Mountains radio show and podcast.
This is Duke from A Growing Concern, and we always look forward to the dog days of summer because it's growing buck season. Bring in your bucks from now through August for up to 50% off our unmatched selection of perennials, trees, shrubs, specimen quality conifers, and so much more. It's our best summer inventory in our history, from dinner plate dahlias to dinner plate hibiscus. We've got your growing concerns covered from A to Z. So come see me and the staff at A Growing Concern on Spartanburg Highway next to Boyd Automotive. And don't forget your growing bucks.
At the local table restaurant, fresh and local isn't a trend. It's the foundation. Many of the seasonal ingredients you'll enjoy are grown right at Snuff Farms, bringing true farm-to-table flavor straight to your plate. From breakfast served all day to creative lunches and new light bites in the evening, everything is made from scratch and thoughtfully prepared. The local table is a place to gather with friends and family. Discover what's happening now and what's coming next at thelocaltablehendo.com.
For a visit to Raymond's Garden Center, we get your plant addiction. We are your source for unique perennials, important natives, and garden classics.
There's always room for one more plant. Come see us at Raymond's Garden Center, 1320 Canoga Road.
Welcome back to the Gardening in the Mountains radio show and podcast. I'm Steve Pettis, your local county extension agent and host. We're here to talk gardening, answer your garden questions, and help you make your garden grow better. Today, we are being joined by our favorite podcast radio show guest, Duke Domingue from A Growing Concern Garden Center. Duke, how's the growing bucks distribution?
We are still in growing bucks all the way through August 31st, up to 50% of your purchase. You spend our little Monopoly money like cash dollars. Good friend.
Cash money.
Cash dollars, up to 50% of your purchase. Come on, bring them down all the way through August 31st.
All right. So today's topic, you and I decided to geek out on fertilizers.
Why not?
We had a conversation recently about fertilizers, and I think it was you were talking about some fertilizer you're real fond of right now, which has basically bird guano.
Yep. Seabird guano. It's collected on this island. They're mining it. It's been around for thousands of years. These seagulls and albatross have existed on a exclusively fish diet for the most part, And they are, you know, excreting all over this rock, and they're mining it now, and it's great. It's 0110. So, and it's a very accessible phosphorus, which is what I really like. And of course, it's entirely organic.
Sure.
Great, great for the environment, and doing a great job with plants.
You guys carry that?
We carry versions of it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of versions on the market, too. Some things that we do carry that I'm really fond of also that we usually, I insist we have them in stock, azomite. This is a great source of, it's volcanic ash and marine minerals is what it is. But it's azomite is actually an acronym for A to Z of minerals. And it's got a ton of trace elements. It's a really robust and broad palette. It includes over 70 trace minerals along with some rare earth elements, and it helps fill nutritional blind spots that plants might have.
Huh.
And it boosts immunity and stress resistance and the structural vigor. I can actually see this. I build it into soils, my plot at the community garden. I've used this. I noticed a tremendous leap in it. My soil building can take some time, but these things are all worth it. Another good really, really, really fine rock-based micronutrient is called metabasalt or greenstone. You remember green sand?
Yes, I remember this, green sand. Yeah. Yes.
So this is what has kind of replaced green sand because the green sand mine is closed. And this is, once again, metamorphosized volcanic rock. It's basalt, basically, is what they call it. So sometimes the people call this metabasalt. It has some great benefits. It prevents fruit rots. It really maximizes what photosynthesis is doing on a plant. And the combination of magnesium and iron that is naturally in it is kind of like a fuel boost injector for like chlorophyll production. So and it enhances like sandy soils or container soils. I love this product. I also – or this particular product is called green salt or greenstone. Leonardite, which is available in many different forms. It's like humic material, basically. And it's an element. Glacial rock dust is also what it really is. And it provides extreme concentrations of humic acid and fulvic acid, which are really super cool. I've been jumping on this bandwagon for a couple years now. It's a nutrient magnet for plants, so it really maximizes if your soil is living, and we'll talk about that in a second. It kind of unlocks all kinds of bottlenecks and acts as a very powerful soil conditioner, neutralizing very highly acidic or alkaline soils, and it's a good supercharger for soil biology. I'm a big fan of any of the humic acids. You don't overuse them, but if you use them together, you can have ultimate soil health. Like the Leonardite is going to be like the main engine that conditions the soil and wakes up all the latent biology, while the A to Z, azonite and greenstone, they supply all this massive palette of micronutrients that are going to be helpful for you.
So list those one more time, so just in case people are trying.
Azonite is the A to Z. Greenstone is the basalt, and Leonardite is the humic acid.
And are these ones that are easily accessible?
Yes, they are very easily accessible. They're very safe, and they're very convenient to use. And they're all
them?
Yes, we do.
At Growing Concern?
Yes, at Growing Concern. You can find them. More and more fertilizer companies are incorporating these, you'll see, with humic acid. Now we're seeing things that are soil-building components like mycorrhiza or even biochar. Biochar, which is somewhat expensive, they'll be like biocharged. And that's a dog whistle that it's got some biochar in it.
Gotcha.
Maybe not a lot. So,
do you carry biochar?
We have biochar in certain products.
Okay.
Biochar, like by the bag, is prohibitively expensive at this point.
Yeah, and it's also not great to breathe.
It is not great to breathe.
So it's better when it's already incorporated into a product.
Absolutely is not great to breathe. So let's just mention
what is biochar.
So let's talk about biochar. Biochar is it's highly porous. It's a fine grain charcoal that's been created by heating biomass like wood scraps or agricultural waste or manures of all kinds in a frequently high temperature, low oxygen environment over time.
Yep.
And unlike charcoal that's used as a fuel, biochar is kind of engineered first naturally, but now we're engineering it specifically as a permanent soil amendment because it permanently changes soil structure. It doesn't decompose like a compost does, and it's kind of like it's a water retention agent. It's a very porous and its structure is kind of like a sponge. It holds nutrients and water, and even in sandy soils. How it maintains nutrient retention and it doesn't deplete is remarkable. It unlocks locked away nutrients. Once again, I'm not going to get into the geekiness of the chemistry about these ions and this ion. That's boring. But it reduces soil acidity. It can balance highly alkaline soils too. And there's something called carbon, I think it's sequestration or something like that.
Sequestration,
is that right? And it's locking carbon into like a stable, solid form that's really very, very, very positive.
So one of the most overlooked nutrients that plants need is the one that they consist mostly of, and it's carbon.
Carbon, exactly.
So I always I use this analogy. You plant a pathos vine, one of those vines, you know, plant, and is in what you call it, pathos.
Yeah, pothos.
You plant that in a flower pot in your house, and you water it for 5 years. And then you look in there one day and you realize there's no soil left in quote-unquote soil. That's because your potting soil was 100% carbon and the plant ate it. It consumed all the carbon. And so literally it just goes away. So carbon is consumed. And that's why by roots, by plants, because we're carbon-based, they're carbon-based life forms. And adding biochar, or if you're like our friend Luke Koslow with the Gribbley permaculture, adding logs and sticks and other things, burying that in the soil so that it breaks down slowly and becomes carbon source.
Mm-hmm.
It's releasing nutrients, but it's also releasing carbon, and carbon is so important to a plant.
It is, and that is something that we overlook, and we don't necessarily see carbon as an ingredient.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about depleted soils, what we mean is there's no carbon in it.
Right, right. What else do I like to do? I like to use mycorrhiza in soil building.
Mycorrhiza is super cool. Explain what it is real quick.
So it's a symbiotic fungus that has a collective network with plant material. Does that sound good for you?
Yeah. It's basically a root parasite, but instead of taking, it gives more than it takes.
There you go.
To the plant.
And it creates this network within your soil. I say it's creating a living soil, which is key. And the more you create this living soil, the less you have to rely on buying fertilizers, organic or otherwise.
Right.
Their accessibility of nutrients and nutrient uptake is great, much better. I think it's great with root expansion. It's unlocking unused phosphorus, it's increasing drought resistance, natural disease shield qualities to having mycorrhiza in there, because once again, it's a plant network and they're working together. Like you said, it's giving more than it's taking. And it's remarkable how different mycorrhizas can, they say there's a communication network. I read a whole blog on this thought it was that they're underground kind of verbs that they're using to each other, telling them what's going on.
Well, there's other languages besides spoken languages.
They absolutely
there's electrical are. Language, that's how your brain works. And then there's chemical language. That's how mushrooms grow and communicate, and they're communicating via chemicals. And when those fungi underground connect the tree roots, well, then now you got this chemical pathway that acts as a internet almost, with the trees as the nodes or the computers that are generating the data, and it's going around the system.
Do you think that's why, like, if you take down a pine tree, for example, do they talk to each other, and does it tell the other pine trees it's not safe to grow here because it's gone?
Well, it certainly will release a flush of emergency chemicals whenever a plant gets wounded. That goes into the system.
Is that like an auxin-based thing?
A lot of chemicals that are basically released when plants are wounded. And if the plants are all connected underground by the mycorrhizae, that'll diffuse through the system and become a signal for everybody else to put up their defenses.
Right.
So is that communication? It is a form.
It is, absolutely.
It's a chemical
and
form
it's smart.
Of communication, yeah. And it's very efficient. It can happen like within minutes.
Wow.
The tests have shown. So in the last minute we got left,
all right,
let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Let's review.
Okay.
So that people, if they were taking notes, because I do have people say sometimes we talk too fast and say too much.
I'm sure I do.
But you know, that's why people can go back and listen to the show again. But real quick, let's recap.
Fertilizers and nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, they all have different needs. There's certain plants that need certain levels of each of these. I recommend that you do some research in determining if your blueberries aren't doing well. Maybe it's because they like a certain kind of soil, but maybe because they like a certain balance. Things that don't like nitrogen, for example. Maples don't like nitrogen. If your crepe myrtles aren't blooming, it's because you have too much nitrogen going on. If your African violets aren't blooming, it's because they don't like your nitrogen and how it is synthesized, so you use an African violet fertilizer. Same thing with orchids. There are certain fertilizers that are built for certain plants. Certain citrus trees need very specific fertilizers. Even tomatoes. Tomatoes particularly need a boost in calcium to prevent things like blossom end rot and make sure your stems are strong. Things like cactus and succulents need certain fertilizers. There's some that want zero phosphorus. Things grown in that evolved in very depleted soils want no phosphorus. So if you're growing mostly things from Australia or like Protea, for example. Anyway, learn about the needs of your plants and find a fertilizer that applies those.
And fertilize. Most people do not fertilize enough. I talk to people almost every day who come in with plant problems, and I just basically say your plant's starving to death. They're sure. Like, oh, I wanted to be totally organic and all this. Well, you can do that, but you're going to have to work a lot harder than you're working, because you've got to really put a lot of organic matter and compost and all of that into the soil.
Into the soil.
To be able to avoid using fertilizers and things like heavy feeders, like roses or tomatoes.
Sure.
Things like that. So,
but once again, soil building is not a quick thing.
No, it takes time.
It takes time, but you'll reap its benefits.
And when you build a soil really profoundly with organic matter, carbon, all this sort of stuff, it lasts forever.
Sure.
And that garden spot will be good forever. And Duke, we're out of time, sadly.
Thank you, sir.
We'll talk about fertilizers again. Maybe we'll get together over the winter when we need something. When I need something to try to find something to talk about, we'll revisit this and we'll do part deux.
Part deux. I like it very much.
All right, Duke. Duke Demain with the Growing Concern Garden Center. Thank you for joining us on the Gardening in the Mountains radio show and podcast. Happy gardening, everyone.
This has been Gardening in the Mountains with Steve Pettis. Steve is your Henderson County agent with NC State University. If you'd like to ask Steve a question, call the Henderson County Extension Office at 697-4891 or email Steve at gardeninginthemountains@gmail.com. That's 697-4891 or email Steve at gardeninginthemountains@gmail.com. To listen to this show again or hear past episodes, go to WTZQ.com. Click on the Features tab and scroll down to Gardening in the Mountains.
Brought to you by A Growing Concern, celebrating 40 years. Bring life and color to your outdoor and indoor space with the professionals at A Growing Concern, Spartanburg Highway.